So, welcome everyone. And it seems that life just won't get perfect. So I apologize for my voice and possible coughing that will happen. And also kind of reflecting on just that fact that life won't get perfect. And can we be at ease with that, with our different needs that sometimes can clash with someone else's or simply with reality? And just to kind of see if we can find our way to be at ease with that. And to a great degree, that's, I would say, what I'm here for. And I'm probably speaking for most of us. This inner wish to find ease, to find a perfection in the imperfection, or to find the ability to be with what is as it shows itself without needing to adjust, without needing to change. And it's not easy. That's also why we're all here. If it was easy, maybe, you know, we could have done one sitting in our lives and gotten it, or one retreat, or whatever. But the beauty that's here also is that, for example, just this meeting with imperfection before beginning to speak. Someone needs the fan, for someone else the fan is a problem. Is kind of really what I wanted to speak about today. And so it makes it for me very, very real, even more real than it was just 15 minutes ago when I was in my room. Like really wanting to speak about this wish in us to meet our experience, to know our experience, both the pleasant, the unpleasant, and that which doesn't really move us one way or the other, which is kind of just neutral or bland or a non-event. And I was reflecting on it just a short while ago, and I'm even now kind of feeling how what I was reflecting on is happening to me right now as I'm sitting here. I was reflecting on how difficult it is for me to say what we're doing, what I'm doing, is about freedom. What I want, what we want, is to really meet life fully. To really meet life fully. And how there's always this sense of shyness in me when it comes to really expressing that, to really kind of taking my seat and really saying it, this is what's important for me. And it's an interesting thing for me to kind of meet and meet again and again and reflect on and allow in me. And so I'm kind of going to say it again just as a good practice for me. That my feeling is that the reason we're here is to really meet our experience, to become intimate with our experience, and through knowing our individual experience, to meet all of experience, all of life, to cultivate an intimacy with life which doesn't know the difference between this body, mind, and being, and this body, mind, and being, or this event, whatever it is. And I guess at least part of why I'm always feeling a little shy to say it is that it seems like quite a goal. You know, really, wow. This is what you want? Yeah, it is. It is. And I also find it helpful to remind myself in these moments of hesitation or shyness. I can feel myself even slightly blushing now as I'm speaking, still really strong. To remember that this is the goal, this is what I wish for, this is my aspiration. But the way is just made of steps, of small movements, of breaths, of moments. It's not the whole thing in one gulp. I can take my time. And with each step, with each breath, with each moment, we're creating a momentum. We're contributing to something that grows, which has a life force in it, that moves us in that direction, that kind of builds up. And also this afternoon when I was kind of writing this out, I was really touched by the opportunity that we have to actually give time, give energy towards this. And in the Tibetan tradition, they begin every teaching with this reflection, this appreciation of the opportunity that we have. They call it the precious human rebirth, which may not be a language that we resonate with, maybe it is, but just this feeling, this sense of appreciation for an opportunity to have what is needed, both externally and internally, both ways, to give time, to give energy to something that moves us from within, that touches us from within. And it seems, at least that's what we're told, at this point in time, there's no way for any of us to know this for sure, that it takes a human life to be able to do this. That's what we're told. So I find that quite interesting. And something that's very unique about us as humans is our minds. And I'd like to kind of explore more this mind of ours, how it works and how we relate to it. And the fact that as human beings, we mostly relate to our experience. We mostly relate to the events that make up our life through the mind. It's our kind of primary tool. It's what we know how to use best and most naturally. And so one of the first things we do when we practice in the way we have today is we take time to let the mind slow down. It may not feel that way, but we're taking time to let the mind slow down, let the mind quiet down, so that we can begin to see what is actually happening there, to learn about how the mind works, to know our mind. And so how do we do that? How do we get to know our mind? So one of the basic things we do is we try and create conditions that are helpful to that. So we choose silence. We cultivate attentiveness, gentleness, patience. And we take time. We give ourselves some time. Again, we don't expect it to happen just through one meditation session. And I was kind of thinking about what happens when we want to get to know another person. What do we do? Again, we create the right conditions. So maybe if we have a romantic intention of getting to know that person, we'll make a nice dinner, we'll have candlelight, we'll have music, we'll do whatever is needed to create the atmosphere that we're aiming for. We'll create a calm environment, a space that helps us to relax and to open. And so this is again what we're doing here, actually, creating that atmosphere. Or we can say we're romancing our own mind, getting to know our own mind. Not in order to get something. And this is really kind of an important difference. We're not trying to get our mind to like us or to need us or to want us. We're interested in the intimacy itself. We're interested in the knowing itself. And we use the breath and the body to create this atmosphere that I'm speaking about, to bring focus, to bring calmness, to bring clarity. And we use them for several reasons. One is that they're relatively simple to connect to, accessible, which again may not be your experience today. I don't know. So they can serve as a connection point, as a place that we come back to, as a place that is easy to connect with, and allows through this connection, through this coming back to an accessible point, for our mind to calm down, and for us to then actually see what is happening in our experience. And we also use the breath and the body because through them we can connect to our experience beyond the mind. Not just through the mind, but beyond the mind, embodying our experience in a wider space. So particularly on the first day or first days of a retreat, as we start to move more slowly through our life and we look at our experience, we're most likely to find one of two things happening. The first is that we're tired and sluggish and unclear. And I just want to take that opportunity to say that that's completely natural and okay. It's just what happens when we stop. When we stop moving quickly, then all that accumulated tiredness comes up. And it's also okay to take time to rest. This whole process works a lot better when we rested. When our body is more at ease, more relaxed, more comfortable. And in a situation like we have here, where lying down is one of the postures that we use, it can be even easier to fall asleep. But that's again not necessarily a bad thing. And it may be that we even start snoring. And that's also okay. If you find yourself sleeping through every meditation, then it's also okay to go and have a nap in your bed. But if you find yourself dropping off some of the time, especially in the first days, it's fine. It's needed. And the snoring can be another sound in the background amongst the many others. The tractors and the radios and the chatting, whatever is going on. Monkeys on the roof. Another sound. So that's one aspect of our experience that perhaps we've noticed today. And another one, and sometimes they both come sequentially at quite terrifying speeds, is how busy our mind can be. And just how many thoughts we suddenly notice are occupying this very small space inside our head. Just how much thinking is going on. Sometimes it feels like it's endless and constant. So what do we do with this busy mind or this sleepy mind? Mostly we just come back to the breath, to our point of connection. Just come back. Just come back. Knowing that we're slowly slowing down, so slowly that it's really almost hard to notice sometimes. We're slowly slowing down. And if we think of how many years we've been on this planet, each of us, and how many moments there are in all those years, then it kind of starts to make sense. That it takes time to slow down, that it takes time to see, to know the workings of our own mind. The mind isn't a problem in itself. It has qualities that are there and that we can see that are actually very helpful and useful to us. And one of them is that the mind has the ability to stay present. Which is really interesting, that it actually has that capacity. And another is that the mind has the capacity to notice what is happening, to identify, to know, to recognize what is happening. So these are qualities that are already there within us, and they're also qualities that we're further cultivating. We're making more space for them. We're bringing them into the center of our mind. So I wanted to give a few examples of these, just from very everyday happenings. So I think we had one good example, at least some of us today, at 2:30, which we'd been told was tea time, and that we should be there on time to have our cup of tea. And then tea isn't there. So what happens? So the mind recognizes the event. Tea is not here. That's the event. It's just a happening. Tea is not here. The mind recognizes that. Or just now, my mind recognized the mosquito flying through my field of vision. I recognize it at least twice, through my sight and through my hearing. So we recognize an event. An event is happening, and the mind recognizes it effortlessly, immediately. How often does the mind utilize its either ability of staying present with that? What actually happens in our experience? So I'm sitting there, and it's 2:30, and tea hasn't arrived. What happens? I look at my watch. Maybe I start thinking, did I get the time wrong? Maybe I go and check the schedule. All these other people are here. I must be right. Why is there no tea? So slowly, slowly, the thinking begins. And we're moving away from, I'm moving away from the bare experience of tea is not here, into something else. Something else. Thoughts, emotions, ideas. And once this momentum of thinking starts, it's really interesting to see how quick it can be. Very, very fast. So say right now, if I wasn't speaking, but I was actually meditating here, and this mosquito would have passed by and I would have heard it, so that my mind would have recognized a mosquito is present. And probably the next thing that would have happened would be the question, is it going to bite me? Where? How itchy is it going to be? Am I going to be able to stay still with it? Am I going to start scratching? Is it a mosquito that's carrying malaria? Am I going to get sick? Will I die here in India? Whatever, you know? Just goes and goes and goes. Usually not at the speed that I just shared, but sometimes it does. And before I know it, I'm not here sitting in this room meditating, but I'm actually maybe in a sick bed somewhere, or even at my own funeral, who knows, somewhere else. In the meantime, that mosquito has flown away, long gone, not a bite, but I'm somewhere else. So I'm not saying this just to ridicule myself, but actually to really kind of look at these things that we all know. We all know for ourselves the way this works in us. How we move very quickly from the actual experience to the beginning of the thought to a whole bunch of thoughts, and then often to an action as well. And in the Dharma teachings, in the text, it's described really these four stages: an event, an initial pull that comes with the event, then the beginning of thought, the proliferation of thought, the kind of party of thought, and then the action. And how quickly, as we move along these stages, we actually lose control. We are not anymore in control of our experience or our actions, but we're being actually moved by our habitual tendencies, our habitual responses, things that we've done a million times. Sometimes even, I think as we grow older, we probably meet this, certainly I do, more and more in ourselves. Things that I've gotten from my mother in some strange way, or from my father, or from somebody else. They've repeated it enough times, and then I've repeated it enough times, and on it goes. Sometimes even with my nieces and nephews, I can already see the same seed sprouting. So just this habit energy that seems to go along. Habit energy that's so quick to kind of get in there. And so what's the alternative to getting caught in these cycles? And again, this is kind of what we're doing here, is to find what is the alternative for me? What is another way, another possibility of really cultivating presence, of being alert and mindful, so that we have some breathing space in that scenario I just described. So that between the experience of mosquito flying past and the fear that comes after a bunch of thoughts in the middle, we can have a gap. We have a space where we can, where I can actually maybe make a choice and say, well, okay, I'm just staying with this mosquito flying past. And if it bites me, then I'll be with that mosquito sting. And it's very, very subtle, but it's possible to really kind of extend, widen that space, that gap, where we can let life unfold in its own surprising way. Not just through our habits, our responses, our expectations. And this afternoon, we were in our room and Nathan said to me, is that rain outside? And my immediate response was, of course not, you know, it doesn't rain at this time of year. But of course it did. It was raining. But I could have probably argued that point for quite a while. And again, just such an example of how this ideas that I have come in the way, block something as clear as the sound of rain falling, and make me say, no, it's not raining. It's great. And I like to think of this gap, of this ability that we slowly cultivate, as thinking outside the box. Again, not being trapped in my ideas, in my thoughts, in my previous experience, but actually being fresh, being new, being alive, we can say. I was bragging to Nathan on the way up that there were going to be no stories in this talk, but then I realized that I lied to him. And I was bragging for no reason, because there is actually a story here, staring me in the face, in my very own handwriting. So, this thinking outside the box, not being limited to to my way of changing or my role in life. Reminded me of an experience that I had about a month ago. We were harvesting olives with a Palestinian friend of ours, which some of the people in this room know. His name is Noah. He's a very special man. And he's kind of a very pragmatic person. And you always get this a lot of joy from him, even when he's facing very difficult situations. And he always seems to really kind of try and get the best out of every situation. But he's very focused on making a good living for his family. So we never actually talk to him about politics and things like that. Kind of never happened before. And this time we were harvesting with him, and there was a young American woman with us who had just come for that weekend. And she was really interested. The first time she was, well, not first time, but she was in the West Bank and meeting Palestinian families, so she was asking a lot of questions. And she asked him, how do you see a solution? Very small question. What would be your solution to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict? Very small question, very simple. And I thought, oh shit. What's going to happen here? And he just didn't even think about it. Very clear to him. He said, the solution is that we all just stop trying to steal land from each other. And we just say, at this moment in time, what's yours is yours, what's mine is mine. Now let's live together. Forget about history. Forget about the past. Let's not try and solve all of that. Right now, at this point of time, what's yours is yours, what's mine is mine. Now let's live together. And I don't think I've ever heard anyone, either Israeli or Palestinian, say that with such clarity and authenticity. And it was so radical and so simple at the same time, and so true for him, that no one could even say, but, you know, what about this or that? Or for him, that was a reality. If it was up to him to make peace, that would be his solution. Completely outside the box. Completely outside the book. And it's not that he doesn't care. He cares, and he's active against the loss of land in his village and the uprooting of olive trees and everything else that is going on there. But at the same time, this willingness to let go of the past and just say, okay, right now, outside the box, in reality, this can work completely fresh. So I was incredibly inspired by that on so many levels. On so many levels. And equally inspired by the fact that someone who was meeting him for the first time could ask him that. Whereas I, after, you know, 3-year friendship, kind of wasn't expecting that. So that wasn't coming into our relationship. It's very interesting, this freshness that was coming with the first contact, the opening. And when we contact those places within us that can really see what is needed in a situation right now, even
very, very complex situations in our life. When we contact those places within us, then we touch freedom. Then we awaken freedom in ourselves and in everything. And it can happen in the most simple ways. At breakfast this morning, I was kind of seeing some people eating their oranges. And it really reminded me of Thich Nhat Hanh's practice of just eating an orange. There was something so present in the peeling and the eating. Just that. No big deal. Just being. So through this coming back again and again to our connection, to our experience, to our intimacy with ourselves, we also learn, we also see, what is it that helps me widen up? And what is it that makes me tighten up? What helps me expand, be spacious? And what creates a narrow feeling? And so we learn for ourselves what is useful. This is something that no one else can teach us. Just us through our own experience, through the intimacy with our own experience. So as many times as it takes, coming back to the experience, coming back to the breath, coming back to the body, coming back to the raw experience of what is going on. Just that, just the happening. Or another way of experiencing it is coming down from our heads into our body, not limiting ourselves to what is happening in the thoughts, in the habits, in the patterns. But coming deeply into our body, into our sense of presence, into who we truly are. Remembering that it's okay to go slow. It's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to be as we are. It doesn't need to be perfect. Just one more step on this path. One more breath. in this body. And I'd like to end with one of my favorite quotes, which is from the Tao Te Ching. And it says, true perfection seems imperfect, yet is perfectly itself. True perfection seems imperfect, yet is perfectly itself. Let's just have a couple of quiet minutes together.